Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your latest episode of Red Men Weekly. A week like no other when it comes to Liverpool Football Club. Of course, it was last Friday morning when we discovered the shocking, the heartbreaking news that Jurgen Klopp would be stepping down as Liverpool manager. So all of our plans, all of our content went up in the air, I think it's fair to say. And we had to obviously rush and panic and get things sorted. But we did it, we managed it. And our content this week, of course, has been mainly centred on the fact that the great man will be leaving the Reds at the end of the campaign, hopefully with one, two, three or four pieces of silverware safely secured by then. But yeah, we kick off this week with a clip from our biased podcast when Keo joined Chloe, Chris and Paul to discuss some other matters around the Premier League. Hey everyone, biased football podcast time. And yeah, I mean, obviously all the football happened, so we'll talk about that because this is what this show is. But because of obviously all the stuff that's happened around Liverpool, we haven't really had a chance to discuss like the FA Cup draw for the Reds and a few other bits and pieces. So yeah, this will be probably a slightly more Liverpool centric episode of this, but I mean, that's what we're all here for really anyway, so let's kind of dive in. First and foremost, obviously if you've been watching the main podcast this week, you'll know who's with me, but I have got Chris Pajak, I've got Chloe Bloxham and I've got Keo with me as well. We're going to start with AFCON, Chris. Amidst all of the stuff that's been going on in and around Liverpool, obviously a week ago the biggest news story around Liverpool was Mohamed Salah injured, allowed to leave AFCON, caused an absolute shitstorm of journalists question his integrity. His agent had to come out and quash this.
His agent quashed, isn't
he? Sometimes. He had to come out. Jurgen Klopp had to come out and speak about it. Anyway, Egypt got knocked out by Congo on penalties. So that's done. So when Salah's fit, he can play for us, whenever that may be.
Yes, thank you.
Great.
They were shit anyway, and yes, they were never going to win it, and they were never going to get to the final without him, and I don't think they were going to get to the final with him, if I'm being perfectly honest. I'd rather him have not got injured and just come home, but we are where we are.
Yeah, yeah. If it wasn't a choice, sadly. If it was, that's absolutely what we would have chosen, what we would have chosen to happen. And it got me thinking that I've just not thought about any of this. And you know why? Because Liverpool have been good. Keo, so we haven't had to concern ourselves with like what's happening in AFCON and what's been happening with the Asia Cup, because does anyone know how Japan are getting on?
Not really.
Probably winning.
They are, I think they were, it says here they came second in Group D, but then there's another, what I've discovered since, which I didn't know, there's a second round group.
Oh, which like the early day Champions League.
Yeah. So they are top of that group, the second group, which I can't get on Google here because it's stupid. But I discovered that accidentally earlier on today. I believe that. I mean, the larger point I'm driving it, which proves it, is I don't really give a shit, and it's fine.
But I'm still reacting to the fact that the Asia Cup's in the Middle East, to be honest there, Paul. Never mind, they've got fucking two group stages. What's that about? Why is it in Qatar?
Well, the same reason why
Qatar have every major competition.
It's fucking bad though, innit? Like, you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, well, yeah, the same reason why we all European football got shut down for 2 months last season for the World Cup.
I can understand that. They're on the world. You know what I mean? They're not in Asia, are they?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so it doesn't look like Wataru Endo's going to be coming home anytime soon, but that is what it is. The Sam.
They are one of the favourites as well, Japan, to be fair.
Yeah, they? Yeah, they are. Right, let's move on to the FA Cup. Anyone watch any FA Cup football beyond us this weekend?
Just the Ev.
Just the Ev. I hadn't even paid attention to this, Chloe. Talk to us about the Ev.
Oh, actually, I also watched Spurs City, and let me tell you, going back and watching football after the devastating news about Jurgen Klopp, I could not have cared. I was so excited that Thursday night when I went, got some Friday night football to watch tomorrow. It's Spurs v City. Yeah, bit of that, please. And then at approximately 11 a.m. when I realised, oh, there's a football game later, I turned it on and hardly took any notice. Didn't care who went through, felt no emotions. However, the following day, when I was feeling just a tad bit better about life, the Ev played, and I was like, oh, go on then. I've got nothing else to do in my life. I might as well stick it on the TV. Very legally, stick it on the TV.
Legally fire sticking on the scene.
No, yeah, it was brilliant. In like the last kick of the game, 90 sort of minute, Luton won with a very, very scruffy goal. And it was the best I'd felt in about 24 hours. It was magnificent. For a little second there, the Ev made me forget that Jurgen Klopp was leaving Liverpool Football Club. And it just made my Saturday a little bit better, it did.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I've got the score up here. Yeah, I vaguely recall checking this at some point to see Mikhailenko scored their own goal and they were losing, and then that was as much interest as I paid in that. 96 minute good old Everton. Don't
always do like some points at stake there though in that game. And shame was in
that's
the cup
true.
Yeah,
but also they're out of everything now. Can't win a trophy again.
That's why the 1995
means
the 30th
birthday next
year, is it? Oh,
that's why it made me feel great.
No one likes turning 30, but it's even worse when it's an anniversary of not winning nothing.
How long do you reckon they'll actually go? If you had to put your money on it.
Well, if they go down to the Championship, I think they'll win that. Does that end it all?
Yeah,
I don't think they'll win it. I think they'll come up second. Like, they'll even get the playoffs and win in the playoffs. They definitely don't win the division. They just get automatic
trophy. That is,
it's not.
Second.
There's a stat, isn't
there? So you're saying the field finish
second. That's the most Everton thing that could happen if they got relegated, is they have an absolute barnstormer of a season and don't finish either top or in the or win the playoffs.
When you say how long they can go, I think there's a stat somewhere where out of the 92 clubs, they've had the least joy and like sort of... They haven't won nothing, they haven't been promoted, and they haven't been relegated. Whereas every other club has sort of had some sort of promotion or some sort of relegation over the course of the last 100 years or so, but Everton have just like sat still, doing nothing.
Shocking, mate, they are. But I reckon they could go 50. If I had to, under on 50.
Another 20?
Over under on 50.
30 years is a long time, like, isn't it? When you get to 30 years, you must be starting to think, the law of averages must do something soon.
What do they need, though? Because it...
Oh, fucking hell.
No, but this is the thing. It's like, so you look at Liverpool, it's 2050, you know, it's come up a lot of my memories of late, and it's the 10-year anniversary of Istanbul. We've just been spanked by Stoke. Brendan Rodgers should get sacked, but doesn't. And Gerrard's leaving the club, and you're looking around going... Where's a trophy coming for us? You know, when's the next time Liverpool going to be anywhere near competitive? And that was only a year on from finishing second in the league, and you feel like you're a million miles away from it. And then a year later, you get to two finals, and actually we lost both of them. But all of a sudden, you know, a new manager comes in, and you feel like it's possible to win silverware. All of a sudden, Everton have literally had Carlo Ancelotti as their manager and got no closer to silverware. They've had like the Dutch manager.
I know what you mean.
The Dutch national manager, you know, they've signed players, they've sold players, they've had millions of pounds to spend at one point. They've had at various stages lots of other things that have been enough to make clubs competitive and win silverware. So what the fuck is the thing that makes Everton break the duck?
It's some question. I know exactly what you're saying. Now, to be fair, because in terms of what they need, do you need three sides of A4 paper to tell you exactly what they need? But I know what you're saying now, because you say, get me a manager that can win trophy. You've had that. Like, spend some money. You've done that. Like, build a ground. Done that.
Yeah. The ground is the only other thing, isn't it? You know, our I mean, it'll have to be a ground plus, because, you know, a football ground's a football ground. You've actually got to have players play and win football matches in it.
Can't play the ground up front.
Well, no, exactly. Yeah. We all look at our boss new seats. You know what I mean? Like that'll bang 20 in a season. But look at West Ham, Chris. You know, they've gone from that thing of looking like an absolute shit show in that stadium, and now, okay, they don't like Moyes or how he plays football, but they've got a European trophy in the cabinet, and they've got some good footballers, and they win more football matches now than they lose. That could be, it could just be like, you know, like that self-fulfilling prophecy of they're just down and doom and gloom, and they feel little and small, actually, whereas somehow giving them this new stadium, you know, like fake it to make it.
The stadium does help them, because obviously the more money they've got coming in, and they will have more money coming in because of more stadium and more corporate and all that lark, that will help them to spend more on players. The problem that they've got, I think, is that if they do something similar to West Ham or what they did with Moyes years ago, which is sort of get to that fourth, fifth, sixth position in the league, that's not good enough anymore. Because those top six are almost filled all every year. So the timing of when they've been at their worst over the last couple of years has probably set them back another few years.
Yeah.
Just because of that. Because now Aston Villa look like they might be around for a couple of years. Brighton will look like they've put the foundations in place. Manchester United will eventually get back into the top four if they don't do it already this season. Tottenham look like they're starting something. Arsenal have got something. Chelsea will probably get it right. At best, they're looking at eighth or ninth. And at that point, Conference League might be their only win.
But Phil is a good example, though, isn't it? You know, they were going absolutely nowhere. They've been recently relegated as well.
And they were nearly getting relegated by Gerrard.
Yeah, and just get, actually, you know, okay, they bought some good players. But buying some good players and getting a good manager. So
that's what they can't do, though.
Shows how fast they can turn, though. Like you say, Villa have been relegated, and we're heading for real trouble with Gerrard. And how long's it been? 12 months, 18 months?
Yeah, about 18 months.
18 probably, months. Yeah. Now we're talking about Villa as like one of the better sides in the league and on for Europe, and I'm talking about pinching the manager, and like that's just 18 months. How can you do 30 years of it?
Yeah. The reason that I was possibly more happy than usual on Saturday was because for like 24 hours, there'd just been Everton fans who were absolutely made up, like, well and truly buzzing. A lot of my mates are Evertonians. They don't care about football, but they're Evertonians, and they were messaging
even worse when someone pays enough
thing.
Attention to be able to know what the top stories are, but doesn't care passionately about the outcome.
They don't. They just knew that Jürgen Klopp, that was just the... If it was anything about Everton, I don't think they'd say, but Jürgen Klopp being a big thing was massive to them. And like, they don't care about football. They were messaging me about it and was like, are you all right here? So it just made it feel a lot better when they'd possibly had their high of the season with Jürgen Klopp announcing and his leaving for Liverpool. And then not even 24 hours later, they were losing last minute winners to Luton and knocked out of every competition. And no silverware for another season. But yeah, I don't know. You know what I will say is...
another
potential point deduction coming, yeah. But the thing about them is, if they can sort of do what Spurs have done, because Spurs' stadium isn't just a football stadium, it's absolutely everything. And Bramley Moore will... It looks the part. It looks boss. I mean, I can't deny that. So if they can turn more revenue outside of football, then... You know, that will really help them out as well. But obviously, all of these pieces of the puzzle have to fit together.
They just need an identity. Someone and they need people from a boardroom down to up to an including manager who know how to make that happen. You know, like, you need someone who knows how to, you know, they need better data, they need better recruitment specialists, and they need a manager who can enact that. Because they're they're raised on the stories of the school of science fucking stuff, where they were a decent side for a few years in the 80s playing quite a good brand of footy. So they've got those like mythical stories about this is what Everton can be. But actually in reality now, it's been so far gone that most of the dads and even granddads of the Evertonian kids now were raised on Dogs of War.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So
that.
Like the 90s, Joe Royal fight and we'll fight till we die. And then like Thomas Gravesen in the 2000s, patting people on the back when they're taking throw-ins and all that shit. that's what the actual reality is. So that's what they kind of like, because they like Duncan Ferguson and they like people who punch people and headbutt people and bite people. You know, they'd have loved Suarez, obviously. But they don't know what they are. They don't know what they want to be. And they laugh at things like cop-eye behaviour. So, we had Baz from Toffee TV calling Klopp the German Martin O'Neill when we got him, because he just saw him as a guy. He thought it was embarrassing.
But this is the point, isn't it? This is the point. They've all been saying for years that he's fucking shit. He's just fucking a cheerleader, blah, blah, blah. You can tell how happy they were or what they really thought of him. Because they know that it's going to be difficult for Liverpool to replace him.
Yeah.
And just their joy of that means that he was brilliant and they've been lying to themselves for the last 9 years or whatever.
Did they make Duncan Ferguson put on fucking Howard Kendall's watch and someone else's sweatbands, Colin Harvey's sweatbands and like, oh, I don't know, Mike Walker's fucking undies and fucking went out there and fucking
beat around the
touchline, drew a few games and they were like pigs and shit with it. Like,
he had all his weight left boot on for.
Oh my God, yeah, 100%.
I think with Everton, that the problem here isn't what are you fix it, it's pure finances. They need ownership, in my opinion. It's got to be a fresh slate, because you can talk about managers and directors of football and ways of playing, but I think it all depends how big this hole is now, because it wasn't just, you know, a few million over financial fair play. They wrote off 250 million before that, and that was the last one. Now you've got this one, and they don't seem to be making loads of money right now. He didn't do that well now, do they? So what does next year look like? Well, it depends how big that hole is.
It's just fucking mad. Again, the Toffee lads talk about it all the time. They signed a deal with, I think it was Kitbag, as the exclusive distributors of their kits. So you couldn't buy an Everton kit in like Sports Direct, because they didn't have the rights to sell Everton kits. So you could go into a Sports Direct in Liverpool and buy an Arsenal shirt or a United shirt or a Dortmund or Barcelona, and there's Liverpool gear for days. But you couldn't get an Everton kit in there. And I think it's slightly changed now, but they're only just starting to come out of that. And that goes back to, like, this is what Liverpool were.
Kit bag around
like,
their stores and everything.
Yeah. This is what Liverpool were a bit like in 2005, where, like, the club shop was shut the day after Istanbul because they give all the staff the day off. You know, and, like, they don't make mistakes like that anymore because they realise that the money, you need the money to be a club that wins things. But they're so far down the line. It's absolutely insane.
Also, like you pointed out on the last podcast, they fought to not get the point deduction or the consequences till this season, didn't they? And they knew that there could have been a potential second round of consequences.
The club did know, didn't they?
Yeah, the club did know, exactly.
The Premier League asked to speed it through last season and Everton said no, basically.
Because we go down.
Because they would go down.
And now they're in a hole again, yeah. So, but that they were going to be in a hole last season, but now they're in even worse situations.
Anyway, I mean, what would we do if Everton weren't there to just help us feel better about ourselves is the big question. Now, I've often said that, joking aside, because they're at least in this city, and I prefer this city to all other cities, that I would rather Everton be the second best football club in the country than United or City or Spurs or Chelsea or whatever, because fuck them, why should they get Champions League money and all that kind of stuff that goes with it? But ultimately, now that I know why I saw so many 1995 beams, because it is the quickest way to shut down any banter, and it's all the lads who had all their Real Madrid gear on for the Champions League finals. They're the people who deserve this.
My neighbours across the road had Spurs flags hanging out of their house.
Where would you
when we played them?
Where would you get a Spurs flag? But after you're taking a punt there, you know what I mean? You've really got to root around in Sports Direct to find a Spurs flag. Jesus Christ.
The thing is that, like, I don't think there's anyone, like, there's no one in English football where Everton had faced them in all levels. World football, yeah. I would not be hanging flags of other teams out me windows.
Well, it's a very, like, you see when you play teams in Europe, like, and it's, because in, like, in Italy, if you show a Lazio shirt to a set of Roma fans, it's like throwing a firework in amongst them. But I always find it funny when fan bases like that, they go to town and they buy an Everton shirt, and they hold it up and we're like, you dickhead, you spent 50 quid on that.
It's not offensive. It is, in Italy it's big though, isn't it? I mean, I know some of my Inter Milan's lads, and they came over to go to a game years ago, a League Cup game, and they seen a kid in Everton gear, and he's like, why is he wearing that today? Like, that's disrespectful. Like, in Milan, if Inter are playing, you won't go and play out in the street or wear any AC colours and vice versa.
Oh, really? It comes
yeah. It's a real colour thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wild. Absolutely wild.
That's cool, though.
Either way.
It's actually quite a nice segue in a weird way to something not so nice, but I want to talk about the crowd trouble at West Brom Wolves. Fucking hell. What decade is it? Anyone? I mean, I know it's the Midlands.
How did it start? Did it start just because there was Wolves fans in the West Brom end?
I've seen a few bits, but the general consensus is that there were Wolves fans in with the West Brom fans, and that kicked it off. But that's fine, in inverted commas, to say fine to kick it off, because you're asking for trouble if you're going to do that. But what I found most bizarre, it like sums up all all the gammons on Twitter and all the people who get enraged around and are so pissed off with like equality and wokeness and all that kind of stuff. The amount of lads who saw there was a fight going on and left another stand.
Yeah.
To like, what are you going to
stand
do?
Behind the police?
What are you doing? What makes you think I'm going to get? I'm in another stand. I'm going to not only leave my stand, but go across the pitch. What are you, like, you know, to go and have a bit? Like, it's a mentality I'll never understand. When people nostalgise, like, the 80s and, you know, the fucking firms and all the fucking violence of it, and, you know, it doesn't sound like my kind of fun, if I'm being honest. You know, I'm not a big fan of getting punched in the face. It doesn't sound like something I would choose to do. But it's 2024... It's the FA Cup. Like, it's not like West Brom are some mad little backwater. This is a side that have been in the Premier League a lot in the last 20 years. Fuck me.
I'm sorry. It just reminds me, I don't know what it was about or if it was the same game, but I didn't see all the kickoff. I just heard about it. I went on Twitter. Someone put a tweet on saying someone's ma thinks that Adele's a rap, and it was someone's mum in the middle of the pitch. I'm pretty sure it was this game, and she tries to Megs a football player and gets expelled. It must be that. I don't know what else game it was, but it was this weekend and it was perfect.
But it's just fucking guys with but baldy fellow with blood pissing out of his head.
He was short today, wasn't he?
Was he a West Brom fan or the Wolves fan?
I don't know, but he was. The thing is, like, your whole head's red.
Yeah.
And he's still
having a go.
He's getting carried. He's getting taken away for medical treatment and being arrested, presumably. And he's still like.
He kind of reminded me a bit of the guy in the square in Basel. Who just kept fucking spinning around drunk. Were you in Basel?
Yeah, I was in Basel.
In the square. And he was just spinning around on broken glass, and he was just covered in blood and all that type of stuff. And I was a bit like, wow, what are you doing there? Like, just carrying on with your life.
You were about 10 cans away from being that guy.
So. No, like, if in the spirit of the moment thing, for example, if United fans jumped up next to you and then someone said, hey, and then it's got a bit of a... And then somebody in the heat of the moment has done something stupid with a rival. Yeah, I get that. But imagine being halfway across that pitch, blowing, because you're not fit enough to run that distance, and being like, what am I going to do here when I get here? Because there's about 10 seconds there. Like, it's not like a split, and then he gets there, and then just gets nicked and banned for life.
But that's
like,
all, yeah,
be a bit more calculated about it if you're going to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Wonderful stuff as ever on that show. And yeah, make sure you check out the Bias Football podcast. It is absolutely brilliant. It follows the Redmen Originals every single Monday. And next up, Steve Hall spoke to the brilliant Neil Jones for our wonderful Journal Insight show once again. And of course, the main topic of conversation was Jurgen's impending departure, and indeed, who could be the man to replace Jurgen Klopp, and who will be the person doing that appointment. Because obviously, as we know, we are also looking for a sporting director, and Steve spoke to Neil about that very topic.
The two leading candidates, as it stands, it looks like it's Xabi Alonso and De Zerbi at Brighton. Both, it's a different world we're living in. I remember when Brendan Rodgers left, and the two main links were Jurgen Klopp and Carlo Ancelotti, were the two that everyone was pretty much speaking about. Two guys with a massive track record of delivering the biggest trophies. Now, Alonso might go on to do that. De Zerbi, not so much. I mean, although there's a chance he can do well in Europe and obviously in the domestic cups. It is a little bit of a different world, you know, like you talk about, like, when he went and got Jürgen and his ability to then to be, you know, he walked in and everyone knows he's a top manager and therefore signing players might be easier. For example, again, what do you think of Di Alonso and De Zerbi? It's a little bit like you're never going to get no one as good as Jürgen Klopp. The best you can hope for is that they're the same. But yeah, Liverpool are going down a little bit of a different route, it looks like, because there's no candidates out there who can just go, here's the medals, who really suit. It's your Zidane's and your Mourinho's. And that doesn't quite feel like the right fit. It looks like, by all accounts, I saw Thomas Frank's name linked as well. It looks like it's like Liverpool are going a little bit like for maybe kind of like what City did with Arteta, where now he hadn't had as much experience as the two I'm talking about, but someone who hasn't done it yet, but you think can go on to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult because Liverpool have not had to do it, obviously, in the sense of they've not had to do this really since Kenny left. And that was a different, the world's different, you know, in football. And Liverpool would never take the Rangers manager now, you know, regardless of his, and we saw that with Steven Gerrard, was there, regardless of his connections in the past. Liverpool went and took Graham Souness after that. But you can't do that now. It has to be, there's far more boxes that need ticking, really, for elite clubs in terms of, you know, your Champions League experience, transfer market experience, worldwide pull, media handling ability, and that kind of thing. What I would say about Alonso and De Zerbi is I think there's a time and element of it, and I think it's pretty clear that those two are going to end up at a big club soon, and that's with the greatest respect to Bayer Leverkusen and Brighton. They're going to get a chance at a big club, because whether they take it or not, that's independent, really, but they're going to get a chance. So from a Liverpool perspective, there is an element that this might be the only chance you ever get to get one of them as your manager. If you think they're the right guy, that this might be the only chance, because they might end up at City and Real Madrid and be amazing, and then you're never going to get them as your manager because they're there and they're in the building, aren't they? Now, I understand why people would have reservations, and I've had a lot of messages of people who have expressed reservations about both of those candidates, because obviously, yeah, Xabi Alonso, essentially, this is his first full season as a manager, and let's be frank, he's had a brilliant run, but it's only January and they're only 2 points ahead of Bayern Munich, and they could easily finish 10 points behind them and go out in the Europa League last 16, and it's suddenly forgotten as being this incredible season, and it becomes this kind of disappointment. So to Zerbi, I haven't quite got the league table. I will have a look at it now, but Brighton are in the league table, what, 7th, 11 points outside the Champions League, 8 points outside the Europa League, doing well in the Europa League. But that's okay, that's great for Brighton, but that's sort of okay. You can pick holes in the argument and say they don't score many goals, or they don't score enough goals, or they don't keep enough clean sheets, you know, whatever you want to do. He rotates a bit too much, he's a bit fiery on the touchline. There's a lot of things that you could point at him. I think the question for me would be, if Liverpool think that one of those two is the right one, it's probably now that they're going to have to do it. You know, I don't think they could sort of say, do you know what, we'll let De Zerbi wait another year at Brighton and to see if he carries on, or we'll let Alonso wait, because they're not going to be there for another year. They're probably going to move on somewhere else. So you might end up in a situation like, oh God, you know, Man City have got Alonso now and we've missed our chance, or Man City have got De Zerbi, we've missed our chance. So I think it might have to be, if you're going to go down that sort of route of the next, as I said, the young or the up-and-coming bright thing, it might have to be now.
And on that, really, I was about to say, again, we're guessing, Liverpool have done really well to keep their story under wraps. We all found that to be on Friday, so, you know, this is a bit hypothesising, but, like, do you think those two are the two that we're looking at, really? Because, again, when Brendan Rodgers left, I think straight away, every single report was, it's going to be Ancelotti or Klopp. I think everyone pretty much had that nailed down. Before that, obviously, there was a lot of talk. Obviously, Brendan's hired, there was a couple of other named, Martinez, etc. Do you think it is going to be one of those two, if you had to guess? Because it's hard, really, to think of anyone else, especially, and I want to get your thoughts on this in a minute as well. Like, it's been announced that Pep's leaving Liverpool as well, because there was an idea that there could have been a succession plan there. But yeah, do you think it is Alonso or De Zerbi, or can you see another name that really...
No. I don't expect FSG to veer too far away from their sort of model. So Klopp, in a little way, is a little bit of a deviation. Obviously, he was a bit older, a bit more established, obviously, than Brendan Rodgers, who's their first sort of big appointment. I know they brought Dalglish in as a sort of a stopgap that became an 18-month appointment. But Rodgers was the one that they went towards, wasn't he? And you know, it was either him or Roberto Martinez at that point, and they were sort of in that bracket as. We think they could potentially be elite managers, but you know we'd have to go on a journey with them. But was it a change in policy? But the way that they've run the club since has always been about, well, it's not about the sort of next 6 months. It's about, you know, putting value on for the longer term. I don't expect them to go down a firefighter route, the Mourinho, for example. I think that would just be. A bad call. I think Ancelotti, obviously, you know, I don't think that's on the table. There are other managers out there, you know, that are in the betting, and you look at that. You mentioned a couple there. There are some in the Premier League that are doing really well. Obviously, Unai Emery, you know, fourth in the table at the moment. You've got Postecoglou, who's gone in at Tottenham and done a particularly good job. You've got De Zerbi. There are a few managers around big clubs at the moment who are. You could look and say, well, are you going to be there in a year's time? Pochettino, for example. Or, let's not say Erik ten Hag, but that might influence Liverpool's thinking in terms of, are United going to be looking for a manager at some point? So I think, I wouldn't say it's just out of those two. I think they're obvious candidates because of the job they're doing, because of the upside, the potential upside that they've got, and as I say, because of the timing. But I think there are others there that, you know, you might see come to the fore. You know, Thomas Tuchel, for example, at Bayern Munich has been one. And I know he's not particularly popular at Bayern Munich, and he's had some, you know, disappointing moments in his career. But he's certainly a manager who's got a very good reputation across the world. So I think that those two are understandable front runners in the race. Both, you would say, would probably be quite obtainable as well. You know, if Liverpool to come. But I wouldn't say that they were the only two candidates that would be being considered, nor should they be.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's interesting. I went back to check this with Wright, actually. When Steven Gerrard was hired as the Aston Villa manager, I think me and you spoke a day or two later about it, and we both half suggested, well, he will be the next Liverpool manager. He might be the next Liverpool manager when Jürgen Klopp leaves. Do you think now, given that Villa ended badly and that he's in Saudi, obviously we know he's just extended his contract, do you think we can categorically rule that one out, or do you think that one's on the cards? Because it's interesting, because I get the sense, Neil, this is mad to say, because he's Steven Gerrard and he's like a legend, obviously the legend, if not one of this football club. It almost feels like there'd be a tinge of disappointment among the fan base if that happens, like, which is ironic because of who he is. But it does feel, given how it kind of went badly at Villa, and then subsequently what Unai Emery did with a very similar team, that it feels like that. Because I would have just presumed he was always going to be the next Liverpool manager, but now I'm getting the sense that might
be. Yeah, I mean, Jürgen said it himself, didn't he? I think Jürgen said sort of categorically he will manage Liverpool one day. It looks a lot less likely than it did. Like I say, what was that? Was that sort of November, I think, 2021? Yeah, it's hard to say because, like you say, you know, not just the fact that it didn't end well at Villa for him. And I think he was a little bit unlucky at Villa in terms of the way it worked out. I think, you know, I don't think he was as bad as maybe history might or the rewrites might tell you as a Villa manager. You know, I think he did some good things. He had some poor luck with injuries and some results that went against him that shouldn't have done. But the way it ended, and obviously since then, what's happened with Emery and the tune that he's managed to get out of Villa has not reflected well on obviously, or not painted Steven in a good light. Of course, going out of sight at Saudi a little bit is, you know, look at two ways. You know, it's a step down, or is it a sort of a smart move to sort of get himself back into the habit of managing, out maybe away from the spotlight a little bit, and not having that kind of, you know, that negative pressure in there. But it's hard to see that you could go from out as a fact and come to manage Liverpool, having your previous two jobs been, you know, Rangers, which, great job he done, and put them in a, you know, a very strong position. They won the league, they were in a very strong position. The team that he built ended up getting to the final of the Europa League, don't forget. And then a short-lived and unhappy spell at Aston Villa. I think it's very difficult to see that Steven Gerrard could be picked. There would have to have been a lot of convincing done from whoever was, you know, in charge of the hiring process to say, no, we believe that he is the absolute right man. And don't forget, from his point of view, you know, he must have watched what's happened to someone like Frank Lampard, for example. He must have watched what's happened to Wayne Rooney, you know, in different circumstances. Their reputation at the top level is probably finished now in terms of, you know, Frank Lampard. It'd be a very big surprise if Frank Lampard ever managed to sort of anything like a top 10, 15 Premier League club, given what's happened to Chelsea. It'd be very surprising if you saw Wayne Rooney managing one of the Everton or Manchester United in the future because of what's gone on. So Steven Gerrard might know that a failure at Liverpool, a dramatic failure, could be a nail in the coffin of the managerial career. Whereas if he was to go back and rebuild and go back to another Aston Villa type job, a Brighton, you know, a Southampton, a Leeds or whatever, there is the possibility then in 5-6 years that you can end up back at Liverpool when the Liverpool's in good health. But I think now would be, it'd be a big risk from the club's part, but I think it would be a big risk from Steven's part as well.
And then the second part I mentioned there is Pep Linders, who's leaving as well, because again, he was the other one. If it wasn't going to be Gerrard, we all thought it was going to be Pep. He's been doing press conference. We laugh because he's getting used to doing them. And also, it turns out giving Jürgen a break because he told us he hates speaking to us all when he left the other day. But like, he would have been the other one, wouldn't he? It is amazing how quickly football changes, because it looks like that isn't the case. It was announced, obviously, he wants to go and pursue a managerial career. Jürgen said again in his press conference, you know, he'd have his backing and he'd put a good word in for him anywhere. But does it look like he's not being considered then, because he didn't even ask that he's leaving the club? Because it would be odd to say he's leaving the club and then a few months later go, well, Pep Linders is now your new manager. That doesn't really equate.
No, I don't think Pep Linders was ever in the frame to be a Liverpool manager. I think that was always just an easy 2-2. Let's be fair. We just dismissed Steven Gerrard's credentials. We're dismissing Thomas Tuchel's credentials. We're dismissing whoever else, Thomas Frank and Roberto De Zerbi and whoever. Pep Linders' managerial credentials are very short. You know, of course, knowledge of the club is one thing, but he's been assistant manager. He's been a training ground coach. He's not been, you know, the figurehead of the club, albeit, you know, he's been a big part of it, and let's not dismiss that. There's no way Liverpool are announcing that he's leaving the club and then saying, oh, by the way, we've done our due diligence process and we've decided the winner is Pep Linders. You know, they would just have left him in place and allowed him to step into the breach. So, yeah, I think Pep's, again, he is one that maybe, you know, if he goes away and gets a job somewhere and becomes that kind of, you know, you look at someone like Arteta or people like that, you step up from being an assistant, go out and make themselves a first-team coach, a head coach somewhere else. Maybe in 5-6 years, if he's had success, then he could come back into the fray. But I think at this moment in time, he needs to go and prove his managerial credentials. You know, he's proved his coaching credentials and his assistant manager's credentials quite comprehensively. He's been part of a glorious era at Liverpool. But yeah, I think he needs to tick a few more boxes before he's going to be considered for a job such as this one. And I don't think it would do him any favours either, stepping in after Jürgen. You know, obviously the similarities and the differences will be even more stark and pointed out, and every sort of comparison will be made at that point. I think it would make more sense, given as well the fact that Peter Kravitz is leaving, obviously Vítor Matos is leaving, that there's a bit of a clean broom in terms of the coaching staff.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Yeah, brilliant again from Neil, as ever, every single week. Never misses Neil Jones. Absolutely incredible stuff from him. And next up, we move on. Speaking of that incredible stuff, we move on to our final word show after Liverpool absolutely demolished Chelsea. Those games have been tight in recent years. This one was anything but. Liverpool far, far superior. The perfect dress rehearsal for the Carabao Cup final. And Paul spoke to a couple of lads about that this week.
Alexis Stad, wow, just wow. I mean, Endo really felt like he'd nailed that role down before heading off to the Asian Cup.
Well, you know, given the criticism the guy had playing as a number six, now I don't think anyone would say he wasn't our first choice number six. He's I don't know what it is about him. He sort of wins things he shouldn't win, and he comes away with them. He sort of scrabbles and suddenly is away, and then making a great pass. And, you know, on top of all the defensive stuff, the passing is superb.
And that's the really interesting thing about McAllister, because what he's not, and look, Endo's not this either, is if when it all breaks down and you're legging it back towards your goal, he's not going to outpace someone sprinting with the ball and put a big slide in and come away with it. That's not his game. It's not Endo's game. It's not many defensive midfielders' games that are therefore good enough to play for Liverpool. But what you then see is, he's tigerish, he gets stuck in, his anticipation is brilliant, so he has to get to things ahead of time now, which I don't think he was earlier on in the season when Endo was doing brilliantly in December. But actually the amount of times then, in addition to that, we're in a little tricky situation and we play a quick little pass to him, and first time he's knocking it 30 yards down the pitch into feet, breaking the lines and putting us on the front foot. And that's the difference between him and, you know, what we think of as a number six, Jamie. You know, everyone wants this idea of like a João Palhinha or a, you know, some sort of defensive midfielder.
I think watching James McConnell the other day, he put in some crunching slide tackle, and they were bordering on. I was thinking, oh, if you're going to be doing this, if you're playing in the Premier League, you might be getting the odd red, or, you know, in the future or whatever. But people want that from. I think if I was picking if it was like the football version of Space Jam and we were playing the aliens, I'd pick a Mascherano in that role. Yeah. I wouldn't initially think to play a more passing style of six, but there were a few 50-50s yesterday. I was thinking, oh, is he going to really crunch it? But he'd just do like a really nice block tackle. No risk of getting a yellow or whatever. He'd still come away with the ball, and then he'd look up and like lob it over to the left wing or anything. You can't really ask for much more than that. There was one beautiful reverse pass. He kind of had his back to goal and was left footed, and he first time round the corner to whoever it was, Nunez or Diaz. That's the thing, that as good as Fabinho was at his peak, he didn't have anything like that range of passing or that. He was more of a, he would start moves off rather than play the killer ball. So yeah, very, very encouraging. And
it goes back to that desire thing as well, that of like his anticipation's there, so he's snuffing out danger whereas they're trying to get out. He's then going into these block tackles, as we mentioned, so he's not committing himself by going to ground and doing the flashy stuff, but he's getting there, and you get a little touch on it, and then after that it's pure desire, because the ball breaks loose and it's then who gets to it first. And he was then, it's a centre of gravity, it's a power thing, it's a determination thing, and he wanted that more than the guy he was tackling ultimately, because you've seen that happen plenty of times where you can get that first tackle in, that's all right, but then to come away with the ball is the next part of the skill, and I think that's actually almost where he's making the sixes on.
And let's not forget that he's sat watching Endo making a place for himself in that side, and you know he's going to come in, he's thinking, you know, if I can't hold down the number six, then I'm fighting against another group of players to try and get a place somewhere else.
Yeah, he's watching Szoboszlai hit these absolute howitzer strikes at the, he's watching then, Curtis Jones pick
and
up
then,
the ball,
you know,
left
you've got Trent sort of creeping into that you know, equation as well, and he's thinking to himself, you know, I've got to get up, I've got to stand up and show I can do this, and that's what he's doing.
It's like that little injury break he had benefited him weirdly. You know, like he got to like go away and have a break and almost digest everything he's learned to date. And we do this, we forget this a lot, because everyone's been saying all season took Fabinho half a season to learn how to play, it took Andy Robertson half a season, we kept, you know, under Klopp it takes a while to get used to how to perform, and yet almost at the same time we were saying that here and then going, yeah, but I don't think McAllister's up to speed, I don't think he's good enough to play in the six, and all of a sudden we're into the second half of the season and lo and behold, Wataru Endo and Alexis McAllister are both looking really, really good in that position, having had time to digest the role.
I'm just thinking, like, we're going for four trophies. Our wider squad, you're like, you've got Endo to come back, you've got Mo Salah, you know, possibly our greatest modern player to come back. There's, I don't know how many people, that if you include, I mean, I don't know if you include McConnell or Bobby Clark, but like with Bradley there, Kwanzaa, there's barely a player where if you picked any of them, you go, oh, I'm not sure about him.
Yeah.
And that's just testament to the management. Maybe Simicas, like, you know. But then
he did a brilliant job.
He got better
the more games. Yeah. That's one of the problems that we've overcome is lads not getting games. They're all getting games of football.
Just to keep it on the midfield thing, I thought it was most telling that in particular, because you've got Enzo Fernandez and you've got Moises Caicedo in the midfield there. So Liverpool heavily linked with Fernandez, and Chelsea blow everyone out the water by paying the release fee. Ridiculous sum of money. And then, of course, we end up in that rather public, rather protracted, and at times portrayed as a bit embarrassing, you know, losing out on Caicedo to Chelsea. Alexis McAllister we bought for 35 million as an eight. We bought Wataru Endo as a break glass. We need someone to come in and do that. You know, so effectively for about 50 million quid, we've got bought those two lads compared to the best part of 250 for what Chelsea were rocking there. I'd have what we've got any day of the week over what they bought there, based solely on the performance from last night.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Enzo, as I said, in the first game of the season, everyone wanted him. They thought, well, this guy is absolutely brilliant, and you know, we just haven't got that kind of class. I mean, I don't think Caicedo's done anything yet. Has he? He's still only young. Let's not forget. But he's got the weight of 115 million on his shoulders as, you know, the best midfield player in the world. Kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. And he's never done anything yet, which is not to say he won't. But I mean, Enzo was just outclassed. You know, McAllister stood out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
You know, compared to him. I mean, our midfield were just awesome.
And I thought it was really funny because I've got so much Chelsea PTSD from the last, you know, sort of almost two decades of watching them with some of the best players in the world come up against us. And, you know, for the money they've paid, and, you know, you said at the top of the show like that, like, you know, on paper, maybe similarities in quality or whatever. I actually disagree. You know, I think, but it was never more starkly contrasted, I think, Jamie, with how they performed, because our lads just wanted more. And this was not, it was like 5 minutes in and I was like, oh, every time it went into midfield, oh God, we're going to lose this here, we're on the edge. That's not N'Golo Kante in that midfield. No. It's not Frank Lampard in that midfield. No. It's not even Kovacic. It's not Makélélé. It's not even Dennis Wise. You know, this is like, that Chelsea team, there's levels, and I hate, it's a bit of an overused modern sort of expression, but there's 20 points between us in the league, and it was so evident by the quality of the footballer, like, particularly in the middle of the park.
Yeah, I mean, there is quality there, and, you know, Sterling, you'd get it and you think, oh, this is maybe a little bit dangerous. He's obviously a very fine player, but it was a bit similar to when Man U came a couple of years ago. I don't know which one of the hammerings it was. And then you look like the team and you're like, that's a Europa League team, that. And we're one of the best in Europe. And it was a bit similar last night. Like, you know, it's not the players' fault for the money that they spend, but, you know, if they live up to the potential, maybe they'll be great, the likes of Enzo and Caicedo. And they have got some good players, but they've got an agent, Thiago Silva. It's just, yeah, it's the levels in comparison to some of those Mourinho sides where you just go through 1 to 11 and you're like, quality, 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 quality. It's not the same. So we owed them a beating and we gave them one.
I totally agree on that one.
yeah, people watching, just how much joy did it fill you with to see McAllister performing like that, particularly against someone like Moises Caicedo, obviously given the summer, because I'd almost forgotten about it, because that's how little Caicedo's been talked about. So yeah, it was lovely to watch.
Because Klopp said something about we were lucky not to sign him, you know, and everyone. I mean, he didn't mean it quite that way, but everyone went,
he said it in like the test event, didn't he, at the Anfield Road, and to all the people there, had a good laugh at that. But yeah.
Do you remember Romeo Lavia?
Yep.
Do you remember him? Yeah.
Totally forgotten he existed until I had a look at the list of players who were out injured last night. And I was looking, because I had it in my head. Obviously, we know Salah was out and whatever, but the missing players last night: Thiago Alcantara, Stefan Bicetic, Ben Doak, Wataru Endo, Joel Matip, Mohamed Salah, and Kostas Tsimikas. And then I looked at their list, and it's like, obviously Reece James would be in there, and Levi Colwill, but like, there's Romeo Lavia. Oh God, yeah.
That was supposed to be 50 million. Like, I mean, he might end up, absolutely. But a lot of these Bowley signings are going to have to start pulling up some trees soon with the 9-year contract.
So my good friend Chris Pajak has a trait on eBay of when he knows he's going to lose in an auction, he inflates the price to make the person who's going to win pay more for it. And that's the thing, because he's a bad human being, basically. But it's bit him on the arse once. I think when he ended up paying like 100 quid over, he won by accident. That's what I feel like with the Caicedo thing. It's like Liverpool just went for it. So here's the most we'll pay, knowing full well that Chelsea would pay more. And then Chelsea went out and spent stupid money. If they end up getting done for PSR because we've basically forced them into spending stupid money on Caicedo, that would be beyond the Michael Edwards level of 4D chess. This would be something above and beyond.
Yeah, wonderful once again. Yeah, absolutely incredible result. Conor Bradley was just exceptional, wasn't he? As was everybody else, but what a performance. And finally this week, I myself spoke to Konstantin Ekner about the topic of Jurgen Klopp's departure. And indeed, we got a bit more insight on the job Xavi Alonso has been doing at Bayer Leverkusen as he attempts to dethrone Bayern Munich as Bundesliga champions.
Let's move on to some of the candidates then, because as ever, Liverpool and Germany and the Bundesliga remain intertwined, it appears. One of them, albeit the best man for the job, is probably the man who's leaving in May. Liverpool do need to start looking at the replacement, at the successor. The standout name, really, and the name on everyone's lips almost immediately after, once they'd allowed themselves to realise that Jurgen Klopp wouldn't be here forever, it went straight to Xabi Alonso. All eyes turned to Xabi Alonso in the media, in the fan base, etc., etc., etc. He is very much the people's pick, I think it's fair to say. I think it makes a lot of logical sense. There are some factors that don't make sense. Of course, there's an emotional connection already involved there with Liverpool Football Club. He is a fan, in inverted commas, potentially not a boyhood one, but definitely one in his later life. You touched on this in the article as well. You said Alonso will potentially be allowed to leave Leverkusen. He's got a contract there until 2026. There's this gentleman's agreement that I put in inverted commas for those only listening on audio. Yeah, what do you make of these instant links? Does it make sense to you?
Of course it makes sense. And I mean, Xabi Alonso has been linked to basically his three former clubs, Bayern, Real, and Liverpool, ever since he like emerged and people figured that, all right, he might be a talented one when he let Leverkusen out of the relegation zone in the later stages of 2022, and then, you know, qualified for Europe and now playing in the Europa League and now leading the Bundesliga unbeaten so far. So, yeah, of course. I mean, then he was linked to his former clubs. Real Sociedad is the fourth one. He was there to coach the reserve team. I mean, he might even go back there at some point in his career. Why not? They are always ambitious, and he's of course, from Basque. So, there's a big chance that he might take over Liverpool in 2024, 2025. So next season, Leverkusen officials were quite confident that he would stay for another year, because he spent 3 years at Real Sociedad, honing his craft. Now it's his second year, not even a full second year at Leverkusen. They will definitely qualify for the Champions League. I mean, it's almost like now confirmed when you look at the point gap to Dortmund and RB Leipzig. So, yeah, of course. I mean, he could stay there for another year. No one, I mean, he's not too old. He's 42. He has all the time in the world to go elsewhere. But of course, now it's the opening at Liverpool. Real Madrid, they have extended Ancelotti's contract until 2026. So 2 more years after this season. I don't know. It might be a little bit long. And you never know. I mean, Ancelotti could be sacked, but I don't think they will do it unless there's like a huge blowout. And then there's Bayern Munich. Yes, I mean, there's a chance because Thomas Tuchel has had struggles. But the Liverpool job might be very intriguing because right now Liverpool are leading the Premier League and are in a great shape in terms of the team itself. Interesting. If it happens, just say yeah, it no. happens, right? Alonso goes to Liverpool. The interesting factor or the intriguing question will be, let's put it that way, that his current like tactical style he prefers is much more possession, basically much more dominant and like, we want to secure the ball. We don't want to give it away. Much more focused on that than what Klopp usually does. Because I looked up the stats. I mean, Liverpool recovered the most loose balls per 90 minutes of all Premier League teams. Manchester City, the least ones, right? So it's interesting that there might be a bit of a deviation then from what Liverpool fans have seen in the past almost 9 years. Just thinking about it, just in case, right? I mean, it gets the transition from Leverkusen to Bayern would be more effortless.
It definitely feels like a shift tactically in terms of the brand of football, but I guess it's still the attacking style of play. There are slight intrinsic changes within that, but it's still a front foot. We want to be the ones to dictate the way the game plays sort of thing. So it's not a huge shift, but you're right. There will be changes. Whoever the next manager is, there'll be changes you would thought. You're not going to get anyone to do what Jurgen Klopp's done. It's got to be a different way. And I actually quite like that because there's been some loose discussion here about Thomas Frank, obviously Danish.
Yes.
And he reminds me a lot of Jurgen Klopp. And I really like Thomas Frank, but I don't want almost a Jurgen Klopp 2.0 because it isn't Jurgen Klopp, if that makes sense. I'd like to see us a little bit removed from that. And Xabi Alonso would, of course, be that. I mean, wonderful footballer, very well decorated footballer, copes with pressure well. We've seen that on the pitch, clearly in his early managerial throes as well. In terms of who he's been managed by Rafael Benitez, Jose Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti, like the pedigree is there. He's learned his craft, as you mentioned. He oozes class as a person, not just a footballer. I mean, you touched on it there. Like in terms of his playing style, in terms of his personality, and in terms of how he comes across in the media and all that type of stuff, you've seen a lot of it. Is he ticking every single box along the way at the moment?
I mean, the funny thing is, I actually said it when the BBC did a big piece on him, like a small video documentary or something. I talked about it, that the funny thing about Xabi Alonso is that he looks almost the same than when he was like 42 Absolutely. Years old. That is 42 years old. That's why now he looks so youthful, because the offense, like when he was 32, he looked more like an almost retired footballer. Not he was in great shape, but like the. Just the hair and how he behaved and everything, right? He looked like an elder statesman, like maybe Andrea Pirlo in this late stage career or the later stage of his career. That's interesting because right now he's still in great shape, and some players like Granit Xhaka have said that he almost runs more than us during training sessions because he's always involved and always. Still like participating in like training games and stuff like that. So it's kind of funny, right? In that sense, that he hasn't really aged in the past 10 years, but of course in his, especially during like the last third of his career, he always was like this like field general, elder statesman type of player. Also comes with his position, of course, like being the deep line midfielder. He didn't do much running at some point, but a lot of passing and then like long balls and stuff. And yeah, of course, I mean, as a he hasn't really changed as a like a person, I think, because he was always very comparatively matured compared to his peers. I mean, like Xabi Alonso was no one where you would expect, like, I don't know, some weird Instagram posts, or I mean, Instagram wasn't maybe around during his heyday, but still, or other things like yellow press coverage about, like, I don't know, some weird stuff he did, which you you know, you play for Real Madrid during a couple of seasons where there was stuff going on down in Madrid, just as an example. So, yeah, and he's still like that. But he still talks about like how his leadership skills are still like developing. Mm. And what is interesting, he once at the media roundtable in December talked about how he tries to find a balance between like being like hard on the guys and giving commands, like, you know, and expecting them to obey his commands. Yeah. And on other occasions, like being very laid back and not doing anything, not telling his players anything, let them do their thing, basically. Let them be who they are. It's interesting to see, because I think you need to find the right balance. And I think there's a lot of Carlo Ancelotti in Xabi Alonso's way of managing a team. Because, as we know, Rafa Benitez was always hard on his players. As Steven Gerrard once said, well, I think Jamie Carragher was who said, like, you once wanted him to say something nice about you. But that's
right. Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely spot on. Yeah, you were absolutely spot on there.
Like, Iron General or something.
Yeah, he was hard. He was hard.
Yeah. I think there's more Carlo Ancelotti in Xabi Alonso. And I think there, I mean, let's remember, of course, he won the Champions League with Liverpool, right? And in that, of course, historic game alongside Didi Hama in the second half. But in throughout his Real Madrid years, like, he was on like the peak of his just being as a player. He reached his peak, and I think that's why also he remembers a lot of things that happened during his Real Madrid time. And also, of course, being a Spaniard, I mean, I know he's Basque, but still, being a Spaniard playing for Real Madrid, still big deal, and winning all these championships. You can imagine that he remembers a lot of things that happened during that time.
Yeah, big shout out once again to Constantine. Spoke to him quite a few times. He's absolutely incredible. Top man. Knows his stuff when it comes to German football and beyond as well. So yeah, brilliant to get have a chat with him about potentially, hopefully, in my eyes, Liverpool's future manager. Yeah, Sal, that is your Redmen Weekly Boxed for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you check out all our content across the channels over the weekend. Obviously, Liverpool take on Arsenal this weekend. Another big game. What could hopefully be the perfect end to Jurgen Klopp's time at Liverpool Football Club. Sounds, take it easy. See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.